Dude, I you know, honestly, all things considered, could be a lot worse. I'm feeling pretty good.
Hell yeah. What a 2025 sentiment. All things considered, it could be a lot worse.
I mean, look, man, we're grading on a curve here. This is in 2025, we're grading on a curve.
Hello and welcome to yet another episode of Masters of Our Domain, the podcast which was formerly about the hit 90s sitcom Seinfeld and is now about the classical world, TV shows about the classical world, whatever we really want to talk about on a given week. I am Marlo Edwards and I am joined as ever by my intrepid co-hosts Patrick Wyman and Phoebe Roy. How are we doing?
Good.
Yeah. Living the dream. Yeah. Living the dream.
Birthday boy Wyman over here.
Yeah, no, I've entered my fifth decade of life, you know, I'm still here.
There we go.
Still here. That's all I can hope for.
Husband to a birthday wife, father to a birthday boy, and I will have my cake.
You know, I'm not a cake guy.
Not a cake guy.
I really like cookies.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
And I really like donuts as a treat.
Okay. Mm.
Like if you tell me that I can have a singular treat, probably going to go for a donut, especially like an apple fritter, maybe.
You're going to have like birthday donuts, birthday cookies. Is that a thing?
You know, I feel like cake, there's a lot of fluff in there. It's not dense enough for my treat needs. Yeah. Mm. And I like,
so maybe look, like a birthday brownie would suit as a compromise.
Yeah. But brownie is a little too chocolatey for me. I like you know,
you don't like chocolate or cake, brother.
No, I do. I do like chocolate, but I don't know. I guess I'm also don't get me wrong. I will eat any of these things.
Sure,
I'm not going to turn down cake or a brownie or anything. But if you're giving me choices,
yeah,
I'm probably going cake, donut, something along those lines.
I'm the opposite. I eschew density in desserts. I want air.
Really?
You want density.
I want aeration.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, you love an aero, of course.
I do love an aero. You know, one of my favorite things are those like Japanese cloud cake.
Those are good.
I love a cloud.
I'm not saying they're not good.
Mm.
But not for me.
Not for you.
You know? Okay. Not for me. Mm. Like I feel about cake the way I feel about distance running. Where I'm like, you know, it's fine. I applaud it. I understand that there's skill involved. It can be quite beautiful, but it's not my
thing. I don't want it for my birthday.
I'm built different. And
it would be a less engaging Netflix show, wouldn't it? Is it distance running? Is there just, you know, they're just cut into various household objects and then you discover whether there's a little guy doing a 10K in there.
Yeah, nothing makes me more irrationally angry than looking at someone running a long distance and them looking like they enjoy it. I'm like, this is supposed to suck. Like, you should look fucking miserable right now. And it's because I know I'm miserable anytime I have to run more than about 800 feet.
Yeah.
So I assume everyone else should also be miserable. And it kind of aggravates me when they're not. I understand this isn't rational. Yeah. It's not a positive personality characteristic. Nevertheless,
so Patrick, I noticed that Phoebe's face took on a very distinct character when I began jokingly describing the Netflix show Is It Cake? Which I haven't actually watched, but I understand that it's a continuation of the internet meme. Do you remember when people were baking the like trompe-l'oeil cakes, where like there were like cakes that looked exactly like real objects, and then there was a thing on the internet like Is It Cake, where people would like cut into like something that looked exactly like a computer monitor or whatever, and then it would actually just be cake.
Very odd trend.
Anyway, they've made that into a Netflix show somehow.
I don't think so. No,
you're mistaken, actually. I disagree. I don't think that is happening.
No.
Phoebe, just because you don't want to believe it doesn't mean it ain't true.
No, I don't believe it. No.
I appreciate your resistance to admitting that this thing that exists does in fact exist. But I applaud this resistance on your part. But it is a thing.
I'm a dyed in the wool. Is this cake atheist? I'm not even kind of like, oh, well, maybe. I mean, like, no one can know everything. I'm like, nope, this is absolutely not.
Yep. No, you're going to go on. You're like cross posting on our atheism.
Yeah, I'm Hitchens. I'm Hitchens about the This Is Cake show.
Mm, yeah. Would he have to and thinking about like, would Christopher Hitchens have to test if he was cake? You know, like he did with like, is waterboarding really that bad? He'd have to like arrange to have someone cut into him to prove that he is in fact not cake for like Vanity Fair.
Is having someone cut into your leg to determine whether or not you're made of cake, is that really that bad?
Is that really torture? Mm. Yeah.
What about if someone cut into your leg to see if they're, what if someone cut into your liver to see if that was made of cake?
Yeah.
Would be torture.
Great day for the vulture.
Great day for the vulture. Yeah. Great day for the, that's what the gods give the vulture on its birthday.
Yeah. And Prometheus' liver turns into.
Yeah, Prometheus' liver, but you got cut into it. And he's like, oh, what fucking liver again? Cuts into it, then Zeus is like, I do actually prefer cookies
or donuts.
It's your,
not really,
it's,
oh,
your,
it's better
birthday
than liver,
cake.
But I'm not really a cake guy.
Yeah, I'm not really a cake guy. It feels like long distance flying. Great for the other eagles, not for me.
Mm.
I really do love the idea of a picky vulture, though. Like a scavenger who's just like,
yeah,
squirrel. Really?
Oh, this is a bit off. You know, it's been out in the sun for a while.
Can I have this like kind of diced or maybe cut into strips or like fried or something? Just something so that I don't know that it's liver.
Yeah, maybe like an Ichiban situation.
Could you disguise it in some way? Could you like roll it into some pastry?
Yeah, yeah, I like this. I'm honestly seeing a real market niche for us to provide products for picky scavengers.
Do you know why I hate being a carrion feeder? It's a terrible job. I don't know how we landed up with this. Other people, they're eating fresh meat or fresh vegetables. We get all the off stuff. We start going through Lidl buying all the stuff with the yellow stickers on it. Do you know what I mean? It's undignified.
So that's what sweetbreads are. I'm not eating that. That's disgusting.
I just thought that was cake.
That is fucking. Is that what you mean by awful? Is that the euphemism? Yeah, you're fuck. Ah, you. Look.
Look at, look, no, at,
look at Dave the hyena. He's tucking in, isn't he?
Okay, so for all of the problems with this show, I'd just like to thank them for giving us the opportunity to endlessly riff on Prometheus getting his liver eaten.
Yeah.
Like, this has been such a productive vein for us to mine over the past 7 weeks.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Much like the never-ending liver.
Every time you think it's dead, it grows right back and we carry on pecking at it.
That's right.
And
do you reckon Prometheus and the vulture have a sort of strange kind of colleague-like water cooler relationship? You know, morning, yeah, kids, all right, yeah. So I've got a crack on actually. I'm a bit behind with
my liver.
Targets, am I right?
Sooner you get started, sooner you can go home. Right?
Yeah. Right, there we go. I'm actually knocking off half an hour early tonight because the wife and I we're going to Death Valley.
A lot of vultures there.
So we're.
Oh, are you? Yeah, you know, it's our anniversary. Mate. Yeah, congrats. Yeah,
what we like on. To do is we just circle a bloke who's walking in the desert and is really dehydrated and he's about to collapse and we just go, ah! and then he sort of looks up at us ominously. We love that. Great bit of fun.
The best thing is it's not a vulture, it's an eagle, but we are pretending that it is a vulture in order to make that bit land.
They're all fucking big birds.
They're all big birds. They're all the fucking same. It's
things you might hear on a night out in Preston. Listen, John.
Okay. First of all,
I'd like it on record that I made a face at that.
you did make a face at that. I don't think he meant that in a pejorative sense. I think we appreciate birds of all
sizes. I said things you might hear.
Pat, don't make it worse. We appreciate
I'm sorry. I'm trying.
Emu.
I'm trying.
Fairy wrens. Tiny birds.
Albatross. I mean, we haven't even gotten into seabirds yet. Like, this is, This is the least the least sensitive thing I've ever said was that I said that I thought to the spouse of a friend of mine that I think calling a woman sturdy is in fact a compliment. Like, I think you should want to be sturdy. I feel like that's from my perspective. I think that's one of the nicer things you can say about someone. I understand it's that like I'm in the
German
minority
viewpoint.
Yeah, look, I very very Northern European. I feel like the Dutch would be into that description.
You called my little boy sturdy.
He is a sturdy lad. He is a sturdy lad. See, I think that's from where I'm sitting, I feel like this is a really nice thing to say.
Sturdy is vulnerable to wear and tear. You know, it's less likely to fail under stress.
I took that as a compliment on his behalf.
Yeah, I understand that for a certain segment of women, not a compliment. I understand this now.
We've done some A/B testing.
It was at the time a matter of some confusion for me.
Well, we're never going out clubbing in Preston again. That's, you know, we've learned our lesson. We've learned.
It's just me going around telling people that they're sturdy and waiting to see what the reaction is. That's
somewhat bounced by the ants. Great night out.
Damn it, man.
Anyway, we're not here to talk about that.
No, we're not.
We're not.
We have gotten real sidetracked here from discussing Chaos Episode 7,
correct,
which we are at least in theory discussing today.
In theory. Yeah. What an episode. I'm going to let Phoebe summarize it for us.
Does this mean, just as a preliminary question, Phoebe, I can see you winding up for this. Like you are a boxer getting ready to throw an absolute fucking knockout punch here.
Yeah. I'm a picky eagle trying to psych myself up to eat a liver.
Yeah. That's what a metaphor for this episode. I feel like the lengths that we have gone to not talk about this episode thus far in our recording session, now some 12 minutes by my count, says a lot about where we're at with this. Is that accurate?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So after I finished watching this episode, I sent a message to Pat and Milo and said that I was furious. And then a few minutes later, it suddenly occurred to me that it might appear as if I was like actually furious and not kind of joking around furious. So sent a follow-up explaining that I was furious in a jokey way. However, I would like to retract that now. I'm furious in an actual way.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm actually mad. I'm actually livid. I'm fuming.
And you're within your rights to be.
I'm absolutely fuming at something that happens in this episode.
I'd like to hear more about this. Tell us why you're mad.
Okay. So we open the episode with Riddy's taciturn mother going to see Canaeus's Amazon mother and holding up a sign saying today's the day. So she does herself in. Now, our understanding up until this point is that she has been caught and done in by the other Amazons.
Yes.
And Canaeus thinks that not only was she killed by the other Amazons, but that she gave her son up before doing so. So presumably this is not true or is not the whole story. Considering that this is the cold open, you might think that this is addressed at some point later on in the episode.
You might think so. But you would be wrong.
Bitch, you're wrong.
Yeah, inaccurate.
Yeah.
So we don't find out correct. What we don't find out what that's about.
I like the idea of killing yourself though, because someone held up a sign like an airport chauffeur, you know?
Yeah, well, you know how one of the most dangerous animals in the world is a hippo, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
People don't realize how many human deaths per year the airport chauffeurs are responsible for.
Yeah. Just by you see the guy and you're just like, not this, and you just immolate yourself. In the
bang. So
thank God I'd collected my checked gun. I'm flying internally in the US.
So we also have Poseidon and Dionysus discussing the fact that him and Hera are shagging. Dionysus is all like, yeah, like what's up with that? Besides, like, I don't know, it's not an interesting subplot. I guess it's not an interesting subplot, which makes no sense.
Mm.
But he also
that is kind of how a lot of men view their extramarital affairs. I don't know, it's just an interesting just subplot.
You know,
it's
a side quest. It's a side quest.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're like, oh, you know, we're in luck. Strange pussy up ahead.
Strange pussy up ahead.
So,
yeah, they heard it.
They heard what I said. Strange squared.
Yeah, referring to extramarital affairs as side quests for a particular kind of man is actually extraordinarily accurate. Yeah.
Mm.
That's really, like, as we've discussed many times, I'm surrounded by kind of like prosperous, shitty golf guys. And that's very much kind of the vibe.
They call it stopping off at the storehouse to get provisions.
Yeah, things of that nature. Yeah. It's always just the dumbest euphemism you've ever heard in your life.
I'm going to play the back nine. It'd be fun to be like an affairs guy, but your excuse is that you're playing crazy golf. And you're just like, some of those holes are pretty tricky. Okay. They're, you got to get it through the clown's mouth.
Which one specifically, Milo? Which ones specifically are tricky? I'd like to hear you. Break this down.
I hate crazy golf. I'm a real. I didn't hate it when I was a child, but I just, when an adult wants you to go to crazy golf, I'm like, no. This happened once. We went and visited a friend out of town, and it's like the kind of out of town in the UK where like you get a certain distance from London and people have no concept of what like going out and doing something is. And a few of us have come up from London. He lives in like a regional town. And then he was like, I've booked for us all to go to like junkyard golf. And I was like, a thing I could do in Shoreditch any night of the week and yet miraculously have never chosen to do. Incredible. and so we went to junkyard golf and I was like, this is really bad. But because it was a regional town, everyone was like, this is great, isn't it? We're doing crazy golf, but there's beer. You can have a beer at the crate. Now that's crazy. Okay. Having a beer at crazy golf. It's like crazy golf, but it's for adults. Mental. That is mental. Sign me up. 30 quid. Let's fucking go. Yeah. Anyway.
So the Joker is just golf.
That's right. Yeah. Well, and you know, the clown reminds him of his mother.
Yeah.
The equivalent of the new equivalent of that activity across wide sections of the United States is axe throwing.
Don't get me started.
You go to a place and I was gonna
bring that up. I went axe throwing for a pal's birthday a couple of years ago. I gotta tell you, it was quite fun. I wouldn't go again. I've got it out of my system. Yeah. I've thrown my last axe.
Much like Verkin Getterix at a certain point in his life, he'd got the axe throwing out of his system.
Yeah, that's loser talk, Phoebe. I think you've got plenty more axes.
Plenty more axes to grind and to throw.
Yeah. Well, you've got to grind them to throw, or they won't stick in the board.
Anyway.
Speaking of grinding axes, should we talk about the B plot in this
episode?
Yeah,
all right, let's talk about it. I should point out, though, when I went axe throwing, there was at least one guy there who came with his own axe.
Hell yes.
Oh, no.
Have to.
His
own axe. Have to. Yeah.
That's
awesome.
So I feel like there's like a continuum of guys to me. And then on one end, we've got guys who take their own bowling ball. And then on the other end, we've got guys who have their own paintball equipment.
Paintball equipment's upsetting.
Ah, have you never met a guy with his own paintball equipment?
No, I have, but not for a long time.
Oh, that's a guy. That's a guy for sure.
Mm.
The only exception to that is someone who gets paid to play paintball. And that is a real thing.
True ballers.
I used to train Muay Thai with a guy who was a professional paintballer, and he got paid to compete in things, and he had sponsors, and so like he had his own stuff, but he had never paid for it.
Yeah, mate, I was sponsored by Farrow and Ball. Yeah, they provide all that. That's how people know they've been got by me. It's the splash of elephant's breath on their uniform.
He's actually awesome. I love this dude. He was great. But yes, he did have an extensive collection of paintball equipment.
Yeah, as you would presume so. Yeah.
I love the idea of that being your kind of career calling.
He was becoming a lawyer. He was in law school.
Oh.
He was
the paintball module.
I think he started doing it for fun when he was a teenager, and then he discovered he was like good at it.
Yeah, this is what I'm saying. Like being like kind of 12 years old at a birthday party, just being like, you know what? I don't know what to tell you other than this here paint rig. This feels right in my hand.
I was 12 years old at a birthday party playing paintball, and one of the weird ne'er-do-wells who ran the paintball thing is sort of wearing kind of an army uniform, but not really. He took me aside and he went, "Oi, mate, no professionals."
And I'm not a professional.
He said, "Well, you should be."
I realized on that day that I wanted to shoot paint. I wanted to shoot it. Mm. I see a kind of wooden structure in a partially cleared woodland, and I'm like,
yeah. I actually love going to paintball because of how, I've not been in years, but because of how just insane it is and how the people who work there take it so seriously. Mm. But in a way where it's like, you can sort of imagine that this is a serious matter because you do it every day. But to the rest of us, that is insane. And then I remember going to this one and he was like, "This is war." And I was like, "It's Ely. I don't know." There's never been war here.
The last time there was war here, it involved an Anglo-Saxon.
Yeah.
That's how long it's
been. It possibly involved a chariot with little spikes coming out of it. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Perhaps even Celtic speakers. It's been a while.
Yeah, paintball is a Celtic.
the handshake Celtic game is that there's a guy covered in blue paint. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Thank you. Round of applause for the group. Yeah. We got it there. It was a tough one, but we got it there. Really, really brought it home.
Congratulations on the riff, everyone. We're shaking hands. Yeah, thank you.
Yeah. Oh my God. I was so mad the last time I went paintballing because I was wearing a t-shirt with like a little front pocket and I had my cigarettes in the front pocket and it got hit with a paintball and it crushed all my cigarettes. I was so brutal fucking scenes. Mad. It was really, really,
Patrick,
really
why are you smoking an orange cigarette? Long story.
Yeah, dude, like it was a tough thing to explain. And you know how awkward it is to try and search through a crushed pack of cigarettes to try and find one that isn't too bent to smoke?
Yeah.
Like this was.
And you need a cigarette because you've just been killed.
Yeah. I didn't want it. Like, yeah. I'm like, I'm dead. The least I can do is smoke a cigarette now. Yeah. Nope. Uh-uh. They took that from me.
You don't want to go to end up in the paint field hospital.
Yeah. No, not without a cigarette.
Not without
you know?
A cigarette. Someone puts a pee on you to indicate that you've already had paint. They don't.
Yeah,
no more.
They don't overdose you on paint.
So I get shot with a paintball. You're like screaming, like medic, medic.
We're gonna get so many angry comments from the paintball community about this. Well, like, none of us are making your eyes on me.
Don't you?
We're not making. We're not laughing at you. We're laughing with you.
No, we admire you.
We do.
Paint.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you for your service. Mm,
that's all right. All right. Yeah. So where did we go?
Okay. All right.
Dionysus. Dionysus talking about his admiration for his uncle fucking his stepmother.
Yeah, sort of. Like it's because they've gone out to bond. They've like they don't have like the kind of the proper kind of paintball guns. They've both got like just revolvers with paint. Mm-hmm. And Poseidon says like, oh yeah, like I love Hera. And Dionysus is like, oh yeah, what does love feel like? And I'm like, what is this as a, do they know who Dionysus is meant to be? Like what did they, is this like one of those functions of the fact that no search engines work properly anymore?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, it's all just AI slop.
Yeah. Like, did they like search for Dionysus and come up with like Dionysus is like the kid from Teenage Dirtbag. Like, is that
kind of.
is that what they did?
Well, yeah, I mean, to be fair, if you search Dionysus uncle stepmother sex, you're going to get a lot of weird results anyway. That's even pre AI.
That's true. Yeah, you are. You are the lost Euripides.
Yeah.
I mean, so
Euripides is lost Pornhub.
Yeah.
Oh,
did I make
God.
Did I make this pretty much the same Pornhub joke 2 weeks in a row? Yes, I did, and I'll do
Pornhub
it again.
Pornhub of Alexandria.
If it weren't a good joke, you couldn't make it twice in a row. That's but true. It is. True. It's very good. I want you to know that I appreciate it. So I'm of two minds about Dionysus here, mm-hmm. because I think if you're viewing the character as a reflection of a kind of a what we imagine Dionysus the Greek god to be, it's absolutely baffling. Mm. I think as a character standing on his own in the context of the show, they're pretty consistent with him.
Yeah,
and I think he's
fine. But then why make him Dionysus? Why not make him like one of Zeus's? Because bearing in mind that we have had Hera saying like, okay, no, like no more babies, going to turn your like current lover into a bee. You have to kill the baby, etc. Why not make that like a kind of like talking point of the plot that he's one of Zeus's many sons? Like, why not make him like, I don't know, like Bellerophon or something?
I can't answer that.
Why not make him Heracles?
This is beyond my remit. But I will say, I think it seems to me that the defining characteristic of the character as they're presenting him is that he pushes those around him to madness and he embraces madness. Like without really trying to, that just kind of his vibe is such that he pushes people to do things that are kind of insane. Like and I think that it is internally consistent in the context of the show that they have made. Now,
we've talked about this a bit, and we don't necessarily need to go into like another complaint about how they've characterized Dionysus, it's strongly suggested that the Hera Poseidon affair has been going on for a long, long while.
Millennia.
And that Dionysus has only just been returned back into the fold, right? So it's not him, it's not his presence that has caused this behavior. But he
enables other people's madness. I really think that they've leaned into that because he makes it, if without Dionysus, Orpheus's crazy obsession goes nowhere.
That's not true, because Orpheus has the kind of stigmata thing and is mentioned in the prophecy. So like, regardless of what happens, Orpheus is going to end up in the underworld. And also,
is he though?
Yeah, I think so. I think like it's a kind of by hook or by crook thing, because we have later on in the episode a very kind of explicit like, oh, you can try and outrun your fate, but like semantics is going to come for you. And this fucked me off more than anything. We will get to this, but the reason that fucks me off more than anything is that there is, in Greek mythology, there is a very, very, very famous "you can't outrun your fate" story. Mm-hmm. It's the big one. It's the
no stepmothers there, let me tell you.
No stepmothers there, no. This is full mother. This is a hard R mother. Yeah. It's happening in the Oedipus story.
Yeah, a hard R motherfucker. You couldn't.
Yeah. That's right.
Back in our day, there was no nubile 32-year-old stepmother stuck in dryer. You had to go to Thebes. You had to kill your father on the road there, and then you had to have sex with your regular old mother. And then years later, you'd find out about it, and you'd blind yourself because that was what you did then.
Yeah, exactly.
It was that simple.
World's
gone soft.
It was that simple. So again, like, you don't have to be. I think you have to be a specialist. You don't have to know to really know anything about Greek myth beyond everyone knows that Oedipus is the story about how you can't outrun your fate. That fate's going to come for you regardless of what you do to try to overcome it. Why use two different stories that are not about that at all?
No. I have to say I agree with you purely from the perspective of what I would call my generally pro-MILF perspective.
Yeah.
Okay.
That it really feels like there was some untapped territory that we could have explored.
See,
here.
Pat is a MILF purist. Unless that's actually someone's mother, he's not interested.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. The Oedipus story really is the gold standard for MILF enthusiasts. Like, if you... That's how you test a real MILF lover from a casual.
This is no casuals here. This is only for the real heads.
Yeah. The owner of the axe throwing place goes up to Oedipus, "Look, mate, no professionals."
Yeah. Jocasta, I hardly know.
Yeah.
Yeah, no. We only cater stepmother fanciers here, my friend.
Yeah.
You need to go to Hackney Wick if you want that kind of caper.
Mm.
I don't know what that means, but that, it sounds very funny.
I mean, I'm about a mile from Hackney Wick here, and even I don't know what that means.
It's just because it's where I went axe throwing. <That's the only> Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
First of all, I just don't want to skate over for our non-UK listeners the fact that there is actually a place called Hackney Wick that's not made up for the purposes of this joke.
It's also famous and trendy area of London. So it's like one of those things that it just sounds like so normal to us, but to you, it sounds crazy.
Yeah, I let you guys get away with a lot here of, UK-isms. And I don't comment. I take it in stride. Hackney Wick, motherfucker?
There's a lot of places called something Wick. I don't know what it means.
Wick is a place name derived from Old Norse.
Oh, okay.
So if there's any place...
It means hill, right? Wick? Isn't it?
I'll tell you what, if it doesn't, it's a bloody good guess, because you know what? So many things mean fucking hill.
I'm pretty sure it's Old Norse.
Hmm.
Don't quote me on that, but I'm fairly certain, because you've got layers of place names in the UK, right? Mm. So you have anything that's Castor is Roman because it's derived from Castrum.
Yeah.
Burr is Anglo-Saxon. And I'm pretty sure Wick is.
Oh, it means farm.
Really? Oh. But is it Old Norse? Was I right about that? Or
no.
Or is it Anglo-Saxon?
It's Latin. It's from Wicus.
Yeah.
Is it really?
I'm reading here. It actually means axe throwing location. Strange.
God, it's from Vicus. Okay. Yeah. All right.
There we go.
Actually, an original term only used to describe the Wild West.
Yeah. I learned this morning of the existence of a town somewhere in the American South called Surprise.
There's a Surprise, Arizona. Not
Surprise,
far from
you're in Arizona.
Yeah.
It's not a good surprise.
If memory serves, it's a little bit bleak. Not a good surprise.
I was discussing that, you know, if you're in the Surprise police department, when you like break down someone's door in a dawn raid, do you have to yell out Surprise police department? And in that case, how are you saying that? How are you getting the cadences to make it clear that there's no comma?
I think you lean into it at that point.
Yeah.
Surprise.
Or you saying surprise twice?
I think you say surprise twice. You say surprise, it's the Surprise police department.
Yeah. Or you're like Cilla Black. Surprise, surprise, police department.
Or you say surprise, police department, surprise, suggesting that's like in bracket.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. The police department who jump out of a cake to arrest you.
Yeah. And then Pat's do you not have a donut that you could jump out of?
Stripper climbing out of the middle. Cookie.
I mean, you say that like it's a joke, this is effectively anti-Patrick racism here.
I'm sorry.
I just want you to know.
I'm
that.
Sorry.
The most oppressed group of all, Patrick Wyman.
Yeah, the most oppressed group of all, reasonably prosperous white guys living in the Arizona suburbs. There is anybody facing more societal pressure than me?
That's right.
Specifically,
No. You're the group society loves to hate.
Apart from
you would be shocked
the picky
at
eagle.
How many you would be shocked at how many people in my demographic do in fact believe that they're being oppressed.
Yeah. Well, it's because their wife wouldn't let them have the big stripper donut cake where she comes out covered in applesauce.
Refuses to let them go on side quests.
Yeah.
Oh, I like the idea.
Please,
I
just
want
to talk to
that.
The wizard about what's under the bridge. Why can't I just go? Let's just take 5 minutes.
And by bridge, I mean her skirt.
Yeah. What's under the bridge is pussy.
It's always pussy. It's the pussy troll.
Yeah.
I cannot tell you how many of cart girls, like the girls who drive around the golf course selling booze. Like, there is no profession in the world where I think you get sexually harassed more than being. The beer cart driver at a golf course in the Arizona suburbs.
Yeah, that sounds horrible.
I feel like you couldn't have the beer cart at a British golf course. It would be like, well, like they would do it and it would stop after one day, but due to abuse. But like not even sexual harassment, just like someone would like vomit in the little hole on the green or something.
Oh, that's built into the experience.
Okay, here. Nice.
That's very much part of it. That's to be assumed.
Great, perfect. No further questions. When are we golfing?
I played golf in high school for my high school's golf team. It was the worst golf team that's ever existed.
High school we only golf came team. In, what a sentence, yeah. First of all.
We only came in not last place one time in my 4 years of playing golf for this team.
Were you like the slobs of the, they were like all the snobby, the private school teams. And yes. You were like the, you know, like, we're going to learn to play golf just like them. And you've all got, one of you's got a baseball bat.
No, it wasn't even that complicated. We were just shitty and we didn't try very hard.
Okay.
Like we probably could have been better than we were. Also, our coach was like a raging alcoholic. It was a whole thing.
Yeah.
But at any rate, some of my teammates, my senior year, just took shrooms before a tournament round.
Right.
And played 36 holes of golf that day whilst on shrooms. And you know what? They played great. It was one of our best performances as a team.
Amazing.
And you know what? All those guys still play. Yeah, still love golf.
Because they're at one with nature on shrooms. That's what you need to be to succeed in the golf world.
Mm. Yep.
Mm.
So also you need to spend a lot of time like wondering whether that's a hole in the ground or whether the whole of the world is a donut organized around that hole.
Mm. Yeah.
Big questions.
Yeah.
Big questions of the kind that you can only answer whilst on shrooms on a golf course.
Yeah. Exactly. What if that's like a belly button of the golf course?
Yep.
What if that's the belly button of the gods?
Yeah.
A lot of ins, a lot of outs.
One time when I took shrooms, I laughed for like 45 minutes at a YouTube thumbnail I found of Sinead O'Connor. A friend and I were discussing like how Sinead O'Connor, like she went like Catholic monk for a bit or whatever, but then she also later went Muslim, which I'd forgotten about that. I mean, God rest her. But and there was a YouTube thumbnail where it said like, it was like kind of like Sinead O'Connor over time. And it was like a video about her life. And then like it had the first picture, like nothing compares to you era. And then it was like the monk era. And then they had a picture of her in like a hijab. And then I said out loud, this is like one of those things that like a really right wing guy would tweet in a like, which way Western man, look what they did to you type thing. But it was just being done in a completely like normal, like, oh, here are some pictures of Sinead O'Connor over the years. And it just looked so funny. It was so accidentally like a perfect. Anyway, this was very funny to me when I was on shrooms.
I have a very fond memory, Milo, of you. Of you being on shrooms and finding something very funny about the toilet paper situation in your Airbnb. And you were sending me these messages about how funny it was that either there was lots of toilet paper or not enough toilet paper. And I was like,
oh, yeah, there was like none. And the person I was with was refusing to ask them to bring us more toilet paper. And I was like, no, but we have to do that because this isn't enough toilet paper. This is crazy. And
you were like, this is literally the funniest thing that's ever happened. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to go along with that. That's fine.
Yeah.
I'm hearing a really strong argument in favor of psychedelics here.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
I think when little man is weaned, I think we should do an episode of this show while on psychedelics.
Hell yeah.
I'm in. Yeah.
It will certainly improve watching chaos.
Yeah.
Well, I'm not going to watch it again.
Live commentary.
for the purposes. Okay, so where have we got to? Like I'm sorry, but I understand what you mean by it, but like Orpheus is destined to have a role in the downfall of the gods, right? Otherwise Charon wouldn't have seen his stigmata thing and gone like, oh, it's him, I have to let him across. Like he is already fated to go to the underworld and retrieve his wife.
Because he'd gone in earlier and got a stamp and then come out again.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. He's been really clever. He just hasn't washed his hand all week. He's going back next week.
Yeah, one of his friends licked his hand and pressed it to his.
Yeah, exactly. He's not paying double to get into the fold of a weekend. Not a chance.
Absolutely not.
Absolutely bleeding not. And also, because the Fates are already like that, they've got like a kind of mechanism by which they are setting up this, like the competition, like that both Anatole and Orpheus wins. So there's an existing mechanism to attempt like that. Like that's like that's it strongly suggests that this is something that is like going on repeatedly, that people are trying to return to the underworld to get there, to get a loved one back. It just so happens that Orpheus is fated to be the one that succeeds. So like maybe he requires Dionysus as like the kind of tickle in the sneeze, but he doesn't, like, it's not Dionysus giving him the idea. It's not Dionysus making him run mad. It's Dionysus operating as like an engine of like existing prophecy. Like it's like Dionysus pushing fate along. I do think that's what they're suggesting here. Also, we have, and I'm assuming this is going to come up, he doesn't know which of Hera's bees his mum is, and he says that he will keep Hera and Poseidon secret if they tell him which of all the bees is Semele, his mum.
It's hard to keep track of all
those
bees.
You know what? And then a kind of bee human resources shows up and says, you know what? That's actually really offensive. These bees are clearly all very, very different from each other.
Do you know what? Now that you're bringing this up, I probably should have labelled them. But, you know, they've just gone in the hive now. And then, you know, they're living their own life in there. So I don't really know. They look the same to me. I know you shouldn't say it. You shouldn't, but they do look alike.
I was all set to label them. I had my label maker. I turned my back for one second. They'd all mix themselves up again.
Yeah.
I spent ages putting them in a catalogue.
Yeah. That's right.
Semele. Well, I know Semele doesn't get turned into a bee because Hera having a hive of girl bees is not a thing. That's not something with any
all
with
lesbian
any kind of
beehive. No reproduction happening.
Life finds a way.
Yeah, that is true. Feels like that would be like an ancient Greek Pornhub vertical.
What, life finds a way?
Or no, all lesbian beehive.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
Ancient Greek Pornhub would be really, really fucked up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think people understand just how...
A lot of birds...
Yeah, just how fucked by modern standards ancient Greek sexual practices and tastes were.
Yeah, like we got like a shower of golden coins. Is that what I think? Oh, come on, that's what is what I think.
Yeah,
it'd be very odd. Like the Funanari guys got nothing here. It's
yeah, it's real Bergheim darkroom at 1 a.m. on Monday morning stuff. It's not what you want.
We've got to get.
Yeah, we've got to get.
This is
we've got,
just
we, much like Daniel Bedingfield. We must.
We must indeed get through this.
So the gods are getting together
for a
barbecue.
The gods are getting together for a barbecue in order to watch Minos defeat his prophecy by going into the labyrinth and killing his son. Right. In the interim, however, Ariadne has gone to speak to Daedalus and has been like, yo, what the fuck? Is that my brother in the labyrinth? And Daedalus is like, yeah. And then she's like, why is he a bull? I sort of remember him. He wasn't a bull. Why is he a bull? And Daedalus says, oh, well, I made the mask myself. So we discover, and this is what made me so angry. This is what made me so, so angry. The Minotaur, listen up, man. The Minotaur is not a fucking bull man. He's just a man wearing a bull mask.
Yeah, that is pretty fucked up. What is this, Halloween costume? Come on.
He's a man who has been left, who's grown up in the labyrinth. He's been allowed to go mad and turn into a monster. At no point are we is it explained to us how he breathes fire if he's just a man. At no point is it explained to us how he has become strong enough to be not just like a monster, but also like Crete's primary method of like extrajudicial punishment. Like, how is he so strong that this is where you send people to be executed? How is he so strong that he executed 7 Trojans? Like, I know he's supposed to be like, he's supposed to have like, you know, been driven out of his wits by living in the labyrinth or whatever. But like, where's he got this like super strength from? He's still just a man. And also, bearing in mind that you're in a world where the Greek gods, the Greek heroes, the Greek monsters all exist. How are you going down that list of like, okay, so what's scary? I know a cow. A cow is a scary thing. Like, what is Daedalus meant to be? Like a traumatized Devon dog walker who tried to walk his dog across a field, and so he thinks a cow is the scariest thing in the world.
Cows are pretty scary.
It's just guys from Devon catching strays out here. I feel for them, but yeah, the whole thing. I have no defense for any of this. This is. It's not great.
So we're told a number of times, we're told the prophecy, which is your first, like your destruction is bred in your marital bed, which yes, is true with Minos for the actual story. And your first child to draw breath is the one that will kill you. Now, because they've sort of lost confidence in their ability to sort of sow the seeds of like a twist and like a narrative of what's coming. We get told about 6 fucking times in this episode that little baby Glaucus was the weaker twin. Yeah, he was born first, but he was born blue. He was born not breathing. Whereas Ariadne, who was a tough baby, came out screaming. Now, maybe it is because I just, like I said, I absolutely love a little bit of semantic fucking about. You know, the bit in Lord of the Rings when your woman there's like, oh, yeah, I am no man. And I'm like, yes, fucking technicalities. I love a technicality. So, yeah, you are quite correct in understanding that this is an annoying semantic technicality, which means that it is Ariadne who is the first that drew breath, and it should have been her in the labyrinth and not Glaucus. Glaucus, who's like a kind of, he's just running riot over in his maze. He kills Daedalus, I think. And even though Daedalus is like, oh, it's only me. And Glaucus is like, yeah, the guy who's been keeping me in a fucking labyrinth. Fuck you, man. Could at least have kept me in a maze. And again, I have made the same joke about labyrinths and mazes twice, and I don't care. So then Minos shows up and is like, yeah, I'm going to kill him. And Ariadne's like, no, you can't kill him. That's bullshit. You've already put him in here. And Minos is like, no, you don't understand. If I don't kill him, he's going to kill me. And she's like, yeah, he's not the monster. You are. And like, writers, I don't know, like high five themselves, like high fiving a million angels or whatever. Yes.
Could have cut that entire plot line.
Yeah. It's not necessary. It's not necessary at all. All we need to know is the person who's going to kill Minos is going to be Ariadne. That's the actual prophecy. The gods are like, ah, what the fuck? Meanwhile, down in the underworld, Rydie, Orpheus, and Caeneus are having a kind of awkward conversation because Caeneus has become Rydie's side quest. And Orpheus's final test, because he keeps saying, like, I've done all the tests. He's done like one test. He hasn't done like several tests. Like, what the fuck? He's not done that many tests. He resisted the water fountain, and that was like the test to like get in the underworld.
Let's not forget he also beat the grieving father.
Oh yeah, he did. But that wasn't like part of the test.
That was a side quest.
He just wanted to do that, I feel. And then he shows up. It's a kind of uncomfortable discussion. Rydie says to Caeneus, like, oh, like, but I kind of think I love you. And Kinaeus is like, oh boy, you know what? Like I've actually got like quite a lot coming up at work. And you know what? You're so great, but I've just started therapy. And my therapist thinks that I just shouldn't be dating at all for a while. But like, so I'm just not in the headspace to do that. So
yeah.
Orpheus,
creating some space for myself.
Yeah. Self-care, guys, self-care. Or Orpheus goes to see Hades, and Hades is like, okay, well, no, sorry, you can't take her out.
It's me, Yorkshire Hades.
It's me, Yorkshire Hades. No, you can't. You know what?
I'll tell you what, you can stay here.
In my day.
Yeah.
In my day.
Couldn't go to Underworld, could you?
If someone called you a motherfucker in my day, that meant you'd actually fucked your mother.
That's right.
Not some flippity gibbet who your dad's married to.
People back.
Yeah.
In the context of this show, they have criminally underutilized Hades and Persephone.
Oh, I agree.
Like, they've got a fun thing going. They've got a fun vibe. I would like to know more about them. And instead, he just gets electrocuted that one time and bitches about some middle management stuff.
Yeah.
I'd like to see more from him.
Yeah. I like the kind of the Coen brothers screwball comedy look they've given Hades.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Sad to see that you can't escape admin even when you're the god of the underworld, isn't it?
It's really unfortunate.
Yeah.
A lot of this show, it's, again, it's madness, right? Like, it's madness that they made this thing in this form at all. It saddens me because I feel like it's not terrible. It's not great, but like, it could have been amazing. And they just kind of, like, if you think about the casting, like, the casting for this is for the most part, extraordinarily good.
Big
like,
dogs.
Yeah, they got some really great actors. There are some really great individual scenes. There are even some pretty good plot lines like that hold together multiple scenes within an episode. But it's just so much less than the sum of its parts. And I find that really aggravating. And there are other things like the last couple seasons of Game of Thrones, right? Where they just did not hang together in any meaningful way at all, despite having some really great individual performances, individual scenes, even some pretty good episodes. Like it just didn't work as a coherent thing. And this does not work as a coherent thing.
Yeah.
Like they tried.
All it needed was a plot.
Yeah. I mean, I think a plot, I think they've got seven, none of which are working all that well individually. And I'm not sure that they're like when you have multiple plots, right? They need to work together in some way. There needs to be synergy, whether that's thematic, setting wise, character development, like the different plots need to synergize in some way.
Yeah.
Usually that's thematic, right? That's the easiest way to do it is you've got different things happening that all speak to the underlying points that you're trying to make through your work. And it doesn't really feel like they do that here.
What I think would have worked quite well is if they had done it like a kind of anthology and had like done like standalone episodes with with myth retellings in this context, with maybe a kind of larger overarching story which kind of ties everything together at the end.
Like leaning so hard into a pure serialized storytelling, I don't think suits the source material that well.
No, because if you try and put the source material together, because it's a corpus, there is a bit actually where there is a reference to the Greek gods as holy books, and I think that is really encapsulating of exactly what this show gets wrong. There aren't.
Yeah. Yes.
Holy books. There is no agreed upon linear narrative. Like even if you go into like Hesiod, which like tries to kind of place it along a kind of continuum, it doesn't like there are still confusions. And I think the Theseus story is a really good like illustration of that, which is that Theseus has grown up in the house of Aegeus's father. His father is married to Medea, and Medea is behind the plot to send Theseus off with the 7 Athenian virgins, so that the 14 Athenian virgins, to discharge the obligation of Athens to Crete once and for all and kill the Minotaur. She knows that this is a death sentence, but Theseus is a kind of young
Medea's like, you're an amateur at killing children. I've done it before.
Yeah. Exactly. Theseus is supposed to be young and arrogant, so he's supposed to be like, fine, I can do this. And this is where we have the black sails and the white sails, and he says that he's gonna change the sails back if he survives, and he forgets to do it, and Aegeus sees and thinks that his son has died and flings himself into the ocean. So, okay, so
such male son energy also. So, the sails. It was a while ago that I said that, though.
Sorry. Sauce about what?
Like, eldest daughter stood there going, like, I knew he wouldn't change the sails. This is so
typical. I didn't remind him because he's got to learn sometime. So Medea has sought refuge with Aegeus after being chased out of Corinth for the murder of Creon, Glauce, the children, and for the kind of wholesale destruction of the life of Jason, as is delineated in Medea, among other places. Although there is a version where she takes the children and then she escapes, and it's supposed to be a kind of anti-Corinthian version of it, but like that's lost. The one that we have is where she kills the children, she kills Glauce, she kills Creon, and then gets run out of Corinth.
I'm Jason. If I don't get my kids back in the next 15 minutes, my heart's literally going to explode.
Yeah. And you know what? And then you got fucking St. Paul. He's doing his letters. Yeah. You don't want to be around Apple. In Corinth when they're receiving their post. They're opening their post like, this fucking guy again. What does he want? Why does he keep writing us letters?
It's like getting a copy of Jehovah's Witness Watchtower through the post.
Address it to one person. Like, what are you talking about? You're writing to the whole of the Corinthians. No, fuck that. Yes. So Medea flees from Corinth and she takes refuge with Aegeus, who kind of makes contact with his son when his son is already already a grown man, or certainly kind of getting towards being a grown man. And this is when Medea decides that she's going to deal with him. However, Medea has done all this on the way back from the voyage of the Argonauts, where she's been picked up by Jason, picking up the Golden Fleece. And guess who is one of the Argonauts, according to every single source about the Argonauts and their voyage? Fucking Theseus. So if you try and put any of these stories in order, they don't work. They don't make sense. They are by nature fragmentary. And you could do that if you did it as a kind of anthology. But yeah, like you said, Pat, trying to kind of impose a serialized story on the top doesn't really work terribly well. And like it's all gonna like get tied up together next week. I have no idea how.
Yeah, because to your point, Phoebe, even when the ancient Greeks try to impose some narrative structure on this, you can see the artificiality of it.
Yeah.
Like their attempts to harmonize these stories and make them into coherent narratives often founder. Like it's not especially coherent when they do it. Why would you think that you as a modern person can take these really disparate stories, themes, ideas, and put them in an 8-episode framework? It feels like you're fighting against the grain of your source material, you know, like if you're trying to adapt something, I think you want to go along the grain of the material. So like Wolf Hall is a great example of this, where the so much of the book all of the Hilary Mantel books about Cromwell are about the interiority of Thomas Cromwell, which does not lend itself well to a screen adaptation, right? Because so much of the book is just what's happening in Cromwell's head as he's doing these things. And it's his inner monologue, what he's talking to himself about, his memories. The way the show gets around that is by often just having Mark Rylance stand there and be silent, and you can see the wheels turning in his head, right? So they're not going crazy with the exposition and turning his interior monologue into a voiceover or something like that. You know, they're allowing you as the viewer slash reader to fill in those gaps for yourself.
Oh my God. Imagine if that's how they'd done the adaptation of Wolf Hall, Cromwell fucking flea bagging straight to camera, just being like, okay, this is me. Yep. Cromwell.
Yeah. That's me. Mark Rylance.
I bet you're wondering how I ended up here from Putney.
But you can see how if somebody was trying to adapt that, that's what they would have done. Something along those lines to try to capture that. And it would have missed the point.
Yeah.
Because the point of Cromwell's inner monologue in there is that he is a man who is mysterious to those around him. That people around him don't understand his motives. They don't understand where he comes from. They can't really predict his behavior. And that these are his great strengths, right? That there is all of this stuff happening under the surface. And if you were to make what is essentially subtext for all of the other characters in the book text for the reader, you would have missed what makes Cromwell Cromwell, right? So they counterintuitively went with the grain of the material to make the larger point.
Mm.
And in this, by contrast, by trying to force all of these disparate characters, stories, snippets, fragments into something coherent, they have managed to miss what makes the material compelling in the first place. That because ancient Greeks lived in this world of fragmented deities who may or may not take an interest in you at any given point. The whole point is that there's no fucking plan, that there is no bigger thing. It's just you desperately trying to survive in a world that is trying to fuck you, trying to kill you, trying to make your life miserable. Mm. And you are just struggling against forces that are beyond your comprehension. And the need to put a narrative to that and make sense of what the gods are doing and why they're doing it and to fucking rules lawyer it, as we've talked about, is like, it so completely misses the framework, is that they are not comprehensible to you. They don't make sense. You're not going to understand them. You're not like, yes, they're cruel and they're capricious, but they're also powerful in ways that you can't understand. And trying to make them beholden to some prophecy or give their rule an end date kind of inherently misses the point of the gods and the function that they're serving for people. Mm. Like, if that makes sense, I don't know.
Yeah,
It
makes total sense. The final thing that happens as a kind of piece of plot is that Orpheus goes to see Hades and like I did all my tests, so come on, time for me to go off and take my wife with me.
Come on, mate, need my wife
come on,
back.
Come on, hand over the wife. And Hades is like, actually, your final test is to persuade me, and I don't think you were.
Very Partridge moment from Hades there. Read the small print on your contract.
Oh, I don't think you have persuaded me. I think you seem like a little bit of a twat. And so Persephone's like, yeah, but if you send him back, that's like a real fuck you to Zeus. And maybe he'll like, you know, maybe. I don't know what Hades wants out of this. Like maybe he wants like a job where he gets to like, I don't know, do some traveling. Get some sunshine. I don't know. It's not clear. It's not clear why Hades is suddenly like, you know what? Fuck Zeus. Like we don't know why that's happened. Like that's sort of mysterious. And so
I'm
Hades
sick of people
like,
coming down to Hades from that London, right? And trying to dictate to us. We've got ways of doing things. All right.
Yeah. We want a people's assembly in Hades. And I am called Hades as well. This is Hades, and I'm called Hades. How lucky is that?
The Hades Independence Party.
It just so happens that they gave me Hades.
Yeah, they're real Quebecois.
yeah.
Just so happens.
I am Quebecois Hades, huh? Coming down here to get your wife, is it? Trying to smuggle her across the border into Vermont.
Great restaurants in Quebecois Hades.
Little black tar poutine.
Ew.
Well, it is real gray there.
Yeah.
Like Montreal in winter.
Oh, yeah. So Hades says, okay, fine. You can't take Eurydice with you. That's like the wrong direction of travel. That's like trying to kind of go backwards in an IKEA. Like, you can do it, but people are going to look at you.
It gets complicated.
No one's happy. You're gonna get your foot run over by one of those giant trolleys. It's not worth it. It's a disaster. So tell you what, you get your wife back, but you both have to stay down here. Neither of you are coming back to life. And Orpheus is like, that sounds no good.
I could have just killed myself if that was.
I could have just killed myself. I could have just killed myself and found her. So that's what's gone on. That's what's going on in this episode. And I have never been madder ever than the discovery that the Minotaur's not even a bull.
Yeah.
He's a man wearing a bull costume.
There's an interesting contrast here with Those About to Die, the dearly departed show.
R.I.P.
You are with the angles.
You don't get the feeling when you finish watching Those About to Die that they left a lot on the table. You know what I mean? Mm. Like, it's not like there was two simple fixes that you could have made to make this, like, you know, an all-time great TV show. It was what it was.
Yeah.
The thing that's really aggravating about this is you've got fucking Jeff Goldblum playing Zeus. Like, that by itself is one of the strongest premises I can imagine to do something really fun and interesting and compelling.
Yeah.
And not that they didn't blow it completely, but they definitely didn't win.
Mm.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Like they didn't succeed. They didn't completely fail here. And we'll see the last episode. I'm sure we'll have more to say on it when we get to that point. They didn't blow it completely, but they definitely didn't maximize the potential of what they were working with
here. Yeah.
Mm.
And I think that's aggravating in a much different way.
Yeah, it's kind of like, it's Iraq War II vibes. You know, the most technologically advanced militaries in the world did manage to defeat Saddam Hussein, but then they didn't really gain what you would call a mastery of the battlefield.
Yes. Yeah. That, sure, I love when we can bring in the second Iraq War as a comparandum for a 2024 quasi prestige TV series.
That's right. Worked 20th anniversary of the shock and awe program. We're bringing it in.
That's, mission accomplished, baby.
Ladies and gentlemen, we got him. Well, that's about all we have time for this week. But thank you, the listener, very much for listening. Thank you to my co-host. This has been a free one. So if you're a free listener, thanks for listening. And there's also the Patreon where you get twice as much as this. So
you know who didn't leave anything on the table this week? Fucking us.
That's right.
just out here doing the damn thing.
And you know where we leave even less on the table? On the Patreon. So
exactly.
If you want
subscribe,
double your mood, double the amount that you pay us. Well, no, increase it actually by infinite percent from $0 to $5 a month. And even though that's a large percentage increase, it's actually a very small amount of money. So if you're willing to put your faith in us to the tune of $5, we can provide you double the podcast.
You have heard from our house mathematician there.
There we go. Yeah, that's me. Bye, everyone.
Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye.